Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome to the Middle Ground, Mike. We got a great guest today, Wesley Warshauer. He did something during COVID that I think gives him a pretty unusual perspective on where America actually is. He gave up an apartment, sold most of his stuff, and spent more than a year traveling through rural and conservative America. And in this day and age, who knows how crazy that can be, while working remotely. That takes discipline. And after seeing America and spending the years traveling outside of it, he's here to tell us some of the things that maybe we all don't know, that maybe America isn't nearly as divided as we're told it is. Thanks for joining the show today, Wesley.
Happy to be here.
So what did you see that convinced you that we're not as divided as we're told it is on, I'll say for lack of a better term, TV? That's the popular term.
Yeah, I mean, if I just set the stage here, I'm living in San Jose, California, a very particular bubble in the United States, educated, West Coast, liberal, technology-driven, Silicon Valley. And in 2017, the election happens, 2016, and then 2017, Trump takes office. And I just ran across this poll, and the poll said something like about 50% of American voters voted for Trump. About 50% of Americans live in a house with a gun. And about a third of Americans believe that the Adam and Eve story is literal historic truth. And I read that and I just thought, I don't think those numbers are represented of my community in San Jose, California. And that's not, half of the people I meet in San Jose are not Trump voters or living with a gun in their house. So my first thought at that moment as I'm reading that poll is embarrassment. I'm kind of ashamed of myself that I'm so out of touch with a huge percentage of my American brethren. And nothing wrong with San Jose, but I just, that's not the demographics of the people I was meeting day to day at the office and my friends. And
nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork. But somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Being in California.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I kind of stewed on it. I read that in 2017 after the election and it just kind of sat there percolating. I was thinking about it. And then in 2020, COVID happened and my job went completely remote. I'm not tethered to California anymore. And I just thought this is my big chance. So I, like you said, I got rid of my apartment. I packed everything that I could into the car and I headed to Bismarck, North Dakota, which was, according to my research at the time, a city with over 100,000 people that had the highest percentage of Trump voters. And I wanted to go to a place that was very different from my bubble in San Jose. And that's where the journey kicked off.
Man, what surprised you the most about the people you met? I mean, especially there, but I mean, especially, I'm guessing you could call that Trump country right there.
Yeah, definitely Trump country. And as I said, you know, I just wanted to go to learn, not evangelizing. I don't really care who you voted for. Doesn't matter to me. But I just wanted to go and see a different part of the United States. And I think in California, I think there's a certain prejudice, I'll call it, of people that are not West Coast, educated, diverse kind of groups. And I wanted to see, are those stereotypes true? And so I went from Bismarck, North Dakota, and over 18 months ended in Biloxi, Mississippi, and slowly finding Airbnbs there for 4 to 6 weeks at a time. And doing my best to integrate and meet people and ask people what they love about their communities. And, you know, the upshot is that I was just very impressed with, yes, there's some political difference, no question. But when you kind of get past those binary questions, do you like candidate A or B? Do you like Obamacare? Yes or no? Do you want to build a wall? Yes or no? Those are binary questions that demonstrate division.
Latte for Keenan?
That's me.
Hey, you're...
Yeah.
Buying a car online on AutoTrader?
Really? But unlike other sites, you can start online, test drive with a local dealer, then finish online or at the dealership.
Cool. Enjoy.
Buy your car online on AutoTrader. Really.
But if you ask a different question and say, paint me a picture of what you think immigration policy should look like in the United States, I was just so inspired. And so I couldn't believe that the answers, the pictures that people were painting were very similar to what Californians want. And I just really left this experience very optimistic about the United States and very confident that the polarization that everyone talks about is overblown.
Well, you know, what do Americans agree about that our politics completely miss, that they don't even, I mean, you know, you were talking about immigration, like what's like this, like one thing that you're going, man, this like really, it hit my soul. It did this or it did that, you know, like what really hit?
I was so surprised that, you know, if you got into a very specific question about building a wall or something, then yes, you know, Californians, what they would respond in a Midwesterner in a conservative area, yes, they're different. But when people in the Midwest were talking about what they wanted for immigration, the general policy, the general compassion, I think it was based on fairness on both sides. I was just inspired that that picture, the root of what they were saying, the moral framework, the ethical compass that was bringing people on from all sides of the United States, what they were referencing as their ethical framework and foundational bedrock just sounded so similar. And so I think that's a beautiful thing that we overlook. You can't turn on the news for 2 seconds now without someone saying, we all know this country is hopelessly divided. And that's just not my findings at all.
No, I mean, I generally, when you get people away from the politics, like I was telling you before the show, I don't see that very much either. You know, we do have enormous political disagreements, like you were saying, when we ask those certain types of questions.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain and the letter x.com/AI.
You know, so when you were talking to these people, finding these things, what separated that real division? Like, did they have like this, like, kind of thing where they were like, well, yeah, you know, how people kind of hit on them? They're like, Yeah, I guess I really don't hate that.
I think one of the biggest lessons that I learned is sometimes people had a lot of strong beliefs that were not based on fact. They were ignorant of a certain situation. And I don't use ignorant as a derogatory term. I'm ignorant about many things as well. I'll give one such example. I remember I was in rural Indiana and I was talking to someone and I was telling them that I grew up in southern Arizona close to the border. And I told them that I went to University of Arizona, which is 40 minutes drive to the border of Mexico. And I was talking to this lady, she's maybe my age, and she said something, "You went to University of Arizona? No way, like I would never do that." And I said, "Really? Why is that?" And she said, "I saw all those videos of those caravans of people from Mexico coming to the United States. I mean, you were at University of Arizona. I don't know how you were studying." And I said, "What do you mean by that?" And she said, "I mean, wasn't it distracting when these huge caravans of people were coming through your campus? How can you study and walk to the library when there's just thousands of migrants running through your campus?" And I said to her, "I've lived in Southern Arizona for 20 plus years. I've never seen that happen. I was a student at University of Arizona. I've never seen migrants run across campus." And so she said, "Really? I saw those videos on the news." And I said, "Yeah, I believe you saw those videos, but that's not the experience of people in Tucson, Arizona." And so to a Tucson, you know, anyone who's listening from Tucson will laugh at this to think that our campus is flooded. We have like a beautiful campus. And so it just, I can understand why she had seen something and she was wrong about the situation in Southern Arizona. And so she believed something. And it's through these types of experiences where I saw good people, genuine people, loving people who were mistaken about some particular fact. And they said something that was, I'm sorry to say, ridiculous. But that doesn't mean that she's bad or that she had any ill intention in her heart. She was misinformed and but no malice was there. And it gave me a lot to think about because I knew that I was outside of my bubble. And I'm sure that when I was in rural Indiana or in rural Alabama, I was saying a million things that were ridiculous to her. And so we all have blind spots in our knowledge, and it sometimes comes out as offensive maybe, or it comes out of touch. And so I really realized that just because someone is ignorant of something does not mean that they are malicious. And we shouldn't treat ignorance as the same as malice.
No, that is, I've never heard somebody put it like so like easily for people to understand, you know, because I find what's interesting is, you know, when I was reading stuff is that America wasn't actually the first place that forced you to question your own bubble.
Yeah. When I was 19 years old, I won a scholarship to study abroad in India. And that changed my entire life. And I talk about this malice and ignorance part because when you're in another country, you are ignorant of so many things and it's very easy to offend people. I'll just give a quick example. I remember I'm 19 years old. I'm in the middle of college and I'm sitting in a university classroom in India. And I had a question. The professor's talking. I didn't understand something. I raised my hand. And another student kind of whispered to me after I asked the question, like, "Hey, don't ask questions." And I said, "What do you mean by that?" And he said, "Here in India, when you ask a question, it's kind of offensive to the professor because you're implying that the professor did not perfectly explain the lecture. The fact that you have some uncertainty that's causing you to raise your hand, you're kind of indicating that the professor did not perfectly explain the lesson plan. Well, if it was a perfect lesson, then you wouldn't have any questions, right? Because it was perfectly explained. You're kind of insulting him by raising your hand by implying that he didn't explain it well the first time." And I thought, oh my gosh, I had never considered that would be, that me raising my hand to ask clarification would somehow be insulting.
Right.
And so that was an instance where I was ignorant of the culture and I'm hoping that the professor did not think that I was bad or evil or mean or rude. I was definitely ignorant, but not, you know, I didn't come from a bad place. And so I think it's very good for all of us to get out of our bubbles and to make mistakes, to come across as rude as, to learn those lessons. Because then when someone comes into your bubble and says something that's a little bit ridiculous, or someone tells you something that is not grounded in your experience, maybe we shouldn't judge them so harshly.
That's hard to do. It's very hard, you know, even when, like, sometimes I have to tell myself, you know, and I try to be as open-minded, as middle as possible, but sometimes there's those knee-jerk reactions where you're like, and then you have to go, whoa, wait, no, that's probably really not how it is. How do I talk to them? And, you know, you've lived in South Korea, I believe China, Latin America, Africa. You know, what do we have any, I know a lot of people say, oh, we're all humans, you know, the standard kumbaya message, if you want to call it. Do we have a lot in common with other people, or is that just a myth?
I was so impressed with the United States. And yes, we're a huge country. We're the size of other continents. We're the size of Europe. And in Europe, they have 20 plus languages. They have lots of different cultures and ways to see the world. And the United States, you know, for all of our differences, which we do have some, we are very united, was my findings, that even in rural America, in West Coast, East Coast, I found that the ethical foundation was pretty similar. And I'll just tell an example. I was digital nomading, traveling around to different places, first 18 months in the United States, and then right after I spent about 3 years in Latin America and in Africa. I was in Africa. I was in Uganda when they passed a law saying there was going to be the death penalty for gays.
Wow, I remember hearing about that.
And there was a division. There was polarization about how to, our, the way that they were talking, I thought, whoa, this is some real division. Are gay people that deserve respect and honor like everyone else? Or are these people that should be put to death? That is some serious division. And so it was good for me to see that those types of things right after I had been through the United States, to kind of compare how is America doing? What are we divided on versus what are other countries experiencing? I remember I was in Chile during a big election that they had. And it's very common, as you know, in the United States for conservatives to look at some Democrat and say, he's a communist, you know, or a Democrat to look at a Republican, ah, he's a fascist. I remember being in Chile during an election where one of the candidates was literally saying, I am a fascist. I'm not like a fascist. I am a fascist.
Oof.
And there was another political person running for president who said, I am a communist. And that is real division. I mean, when you think about what do people want, is it towards communism or fascism? And to state it so plainly, I think it puts our divisions in perspective. So I'm just so impressed with the United States. And I don't think I necessarily have that appreciation that if you go and you ask someone in a conservative or liberal place and you ask them a question that's a binary question, you know, do you prefer candidate A or B? Yes, you're going to get division and it's going to show a poll that says 50% of Americans want this and 50%. Look at that division. Look at that polarization.
Right.
But if you get beyond that and ask them, how do you see people? How do you see what's the definition of justice or fairness? I was just so impressed that actually people were kind of similar. And I think it's a great quality that the United States has.
You know, what does being an outsider, I guess, teach you that staying comfortable never can?
That's a very good question. I'm a big believer in being uncomfortable. I think that's where the real growth is. When you leave your bubble for the first time, or not the fifth time or the hundredth time, that's when all the growth happens. When you sit in the comfort of your bubble and you're talking to people who think the same as you, who watch the same media as you, who vote the same way as you, who have the same jobs as you, how much are you really growing on a day-to-day? What's really great is the friction that happens of two bubbles coming close to each other, colliding or scraping past each other. That's where you're really going to grow. I'll tell another example where I first conceptualized this idea of bubble. I remember I was 18 years old, first few weeks of college. and someone said, you know, in the dorm, you got to go to this volleyball event or something, play volleyball. I had never played volleyball in my life, but I thought, okay, sure. And so I'm there and I get paired with this person who is a Japanese foreign exchange student. I had never been to Japan, didn't know anything about Japan. And so we're playing volleyball together and we're playing, and then we're done and we're sitting down, we're kind of resting, drinking some water. And he asked me, hey, I've heard about this holiday in America. It's called Halloween. What is that? And so I never explained Halloween before. So I'm explaining what is Halloween. And okay, he's trying to get it. And I had heard of this joke just a few days before about Halloween. It was a joke that I heard. And we're talking about Halloween. And just very innocently, I just said, oh, I just heard a joke about Halloween since we're talking about it. You want to hear a joke? He goes, yeah. And so I'm telling this Japanese foreign exchange student this joke. And I said, all right, here's the joke. Knock, knock. And there? he just sat there for 10 seconds in silence. And he said, I don't get the joke. And that just hit me like a ton of bricks, because I just said that to you and you knew exactly this paradigm. You knew what to say because we're from a similar culture and right. You know this paradigm of a knock-knock joke, and he didn't. And I started laughing, not at him, but at laughing at, yeah, like, why would I expect him to know what a knock-knock joke is? He doesn't have that in Japan. And it really, I mean, that's a very innocent example, but there are so many things in my culture, in my bubble, that I take for granted that I just assume other people know. And when you go to some other place, maybe they don't. I think it's common knowledge to know what a knock-knock joke is. And I was proven wrong. He had never heard of it. In fact, he said, I don't get the joke.
Wow.
And it's really good to have those moments to realize, huh, I wonder what things I'm assuming everyone else knows as common knowledge that maybe is not so common.
I would have never, to be honest, I would have never thought about it like that. I mean, that's definitely different. You know, when you spend so much time outside of the United States, you know, you eventually start seeing America through other people's eyes, right? You know, what did living outside of the country make you realize Americans misunderstand about ourselves?
So much. Yeah. I mean, there's good. It's so good to be abroad because you can see the good parts and the bad parts. I'll tell another story if you don't mind. I think it illustrates kind of what I'm trying to say. I remember I was in Togo, which is a country in West Africa, not very wealthy. And I was there and I had hired this guide to show me around. And so me and him, we spent 3 days together as my guide, something. We're about the same age. And we just completely clicked. Like it was just an incredible experience to meet someone who's obviously from a different culture, different country, language, but we just totally vibed. And we asked each other 1,000 questions in a few days about, tell me about this in Togo, tell me about this in America. And we just went back and forth. And I remember this must have been 1 of 1,000 questions. I said to him, tell me, what's your favorite movie? And he thought for a second and he said, The Avengers. And I said, oh, okay, that's cool. Yeah, but tell me, like, what's your favorite local movie, your favorite movie from Togo? And he said, he kind of thought about it for a second and he, I don't think Togo's ever made a movie. I don't think we have enough money to make a movie. And I was kind of shocked and I felt kind of bad. And I said, really? Like, never? There's never been a movie made in Togo? And I said, no, that can't be right. And I said, well, so when you go to the movie theater, what kind of movies are you seeing? And he kind of paused for a second and he said, I don't think Togo has any movie theaters. I don't think anyone could afford it. And that just really shook me, A, because I had never conceptualized of any person, of any country that didn't have enough, that couldn't support a movie theater. And I came across as kind of a jerk, right? I mean, here I am kind of bragging or looking very out of touch, thinking, just assuming that of course everyone has a movie theater. And that was not the case at all. And I came across as a rich American. And that was not my intention. But I think that having those experiences is great for us, because it shows us that maybe we're a little bit too, we take for granted the incredible opportunities and the incredible wealth that we have in the United States. Conversely, you know, there's things about the United States that other countries are doing better. In South Korea, for instance, they don't have crime. I remember once I was offering to walk my Korean studies tutor home. We were studying in a cafe late at night and I wanted to walk her home. It's like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. We're in a city. And so I offered to walk her home and she said, "Walk me home. Why do you want to walk me home?" And I said, "Oh, just to make sure you get home safely." And she said, Why would I not get home safely?" And I thought, "I don't know, just want to make sure you're okay. Should I walk you home?" And she said, "So you want to go to my home?" She thought I was trying to go home with her.
Jeez.
And yeah, obviously that was not my intention. I was trying to be chivalrous. I was trying to make sure she got home safely. She couldn't even conceptualize of a country, of a place. She couldn't even conceptualize of an idea that you would need protection or help going home, that you wouldn't get home safely. And that was a big epiphany moment for me because I realized, wow, how incredible is it to have a country where people don't worry about physical safety? And maybe that's something America should look into. You know, how are Koreans doing it? And so by leaving your bubble, you learn how other places are, the experience of other people, and you learn things that America's doing great, and you should really be thankful and grateful for the incredible country that we live in and the great things we have. But also when you see things where other countries are doing it better, you can really recognize and say, wow, other countries have been able to beat crime. How do they do that? And that's the benefits of going abroad.
No, I mean, it's, you know, you've seen so many different countries and obviously political systems. You know, those are some of the things I feel why you are optimistic about America. But, you know, Americans are more alike than our political coverage makes us appear. You know, why does the opposite version dominate so much of what we see? Is it politics? Is it media incentives, social media? Or are some humans just simply more interested in conflict?
That's a great question. I feel like it's a mix of tribalism. I'm on team blue or I'm on team red. I'm urban, I'm rural, I'm Midwest, I'm South. I think people have a lot of preconceptions. I remember I was in Alabama and I went to this barbecue place in a very rural place but it was a famous place. And I go to this place and I walk in and this guy who's the owner, he looks at me and we start talking a little bit and he says to me, "Wow, where's your accent from?" And of course, I think he has an accent.
Right.
And I said, "I'm living in California right now." And he said, "California? Don't you bring that California socialism over here." And I just remember laughing, like, you know, because I'm from California, I love socialism. Obviously, that's not true. And he just had this preconception, and maybe it's tribal, it's media, but that's, you know, he put me in some box that I am not in. And conversely, Californians put people that are in the Midwest or in rural communities or Trump voters or whatever, they put them in a box, in my opinion, unfairly. I think it's not a very nuanced position. One thing I like about your show is that, you know, you prefer the centrist position. There is no teams that you need to defer to. It's think for yourself. And so I think everyone is in a bit of a box, and yeah, that influences how people see other people.
Yeah, you know, I talked a little bit before the show, and I definitely have some views that, depending how you want to look at it, it could literally be viewed as right or left, depending the person you're talking to. I've literally had people, when I talk to them, they'll go, "Oh, you're a Republican," then, "Oh, you're a Democrat." And I'm like, "What?" I'm like, you know, it's insanity. I was telling you about healthcare before the show, and I've literally, that position, I've had both sides tell me I'm the opposite side. And I'm like, "Do you really hear yourself?" And they're like, "I'm just telling you, you don't even know what you are." And I'm like, okay. And when people get like that, I just instantly check out in that conversation, because I'm like, I could literally show you the answer to all of mankind's problems and we could all live forever, and you would still tell me I'm full of it. So when somebody gets like that, I just generally stop engaging them, because all it's going to do is irritate my soul, get them more amped up, and nothing gets solved. Maybe when they calm down, we can get back to it, you know, but we can make this a little practical for some people. You know, if somebody listening or watching feels like the country is falling apart and everybody on the other side hates them, what would you actually tell them to do without turning into a brawl.
I don't know. People talk about how heated it gets with politics. And, you know, that was just not my situation at all. I remember being in Mississippi or South Dakota or rural Missouri, and you go into a restaurant and you sit down and you ask the waiter what's your favorite thing to eat here? And then you kind of, especially in small towns, it's a bit easier. And you start talking to people, and sometimes it gets political. I started with, tell me about this town. Tell me about your community here. People love to talk about where they're from, and they're very proud of it usually. And so it just kind of, you talk about the community. Obviously, I'm curious. I want to know what it's like to be there. And sometimes it gets into politics. Sometimes it doesn't. I don't think I ever had an instance where it escalated into some big conflict or anything. I think sometimes there's a lot of triggering words people will hear. I remember once talking to someone, and they said that someone said that they had voted for Trump, and a liberal person who was kind of in the conversation said, you voted for Trump? Oh, so you like putting kids in cages.
Jesus.
It's like something that, no, they don't, of course they don't want. And of course there's many examples on the other side too. Like me being from California, he's guessing who I voted for, and he's guessing that I somehow like socialism. And so I really think we jump to some conclusions, and we ask people to defend the worst of the other side, or sorry, the worst of our side. Which I think the average American does not do that. I think it was much more nuanced. I would always ask, I asked people who they voted for, and sometimes I would dig into it and they would say, oh yeah, of course I don't agree with that. That was a ridiculous thing. And so I think people don't give other people the benefit of the doubt. I had many people that were in rural communities. They said they voted for Trump, and they told me a bunch of things that they hated about him. And if you were to ask a liberal in California, in the bubble that I'm living in, so frequently would someone just, you would just assume that.
No, totally fine. You've traveled through you've lived in other cultures. You've traveled through parts of America that people sometimes talk about without ever actually visiting. Like, I've never been to San Jose. I've been to LA, but not San Jose, And that people, you've worked in Silicon Valley. Everybody kind of knows, at least has an idea what that is, I should say. You deliberately put yourself in situations where you are the outsider. How did you get the strength that oomph to do it? Because I'm not going to lie, I've been doing this, and I'm still way more comfortable interviewing somebody like this than I would be in person. If I was in person, I'd probably be stuttering half the time.
I don't know. It's low stakes conversations, right? You're talking about, usually it starts, tell me about what burger should I order at this restaurant, or what's your favorite barbecue here? That's with some guy in Alabama, and you get to talking. Frequently, I would go to the same butcher, or go to the same bakery, or go to the same restaurant. And so I would talk to the same person a few times. And sometimes I would ask him out to coffee, sometimes not. We would just kind of chat at the restaurant or something. But people seem to be very open. And, if you're not judgmental or you're not rude, you're not evangelizing, you're just curious, I think it's really good. And I think it's good to talk to people and see that just because they voted differently than you, or they're from a different community, in San Jose, California, everyone there is involved in tech. I'm sure that they maybe don't know too much about farming communities or ranching communities in West North Dakota. And it's incredible to go and talk to people, and they'll tell you about it. And I'll give one such example. I remember when I was in San Jose, I was telling one of my friends that I was going to North Dakota. And one of my friends, she's Vietnamese American. And she had said something like, I can't believe you're going there, or something. And she said, I don't think they would appreciate a person that looks like me. Her family comes from refugees from Vietnam after the war. And I didn't know anything about North Dakota. And I thought, I don't know. I don't know about that. And so I'm in North Dakota. I want to see if her hypothesis is true. And so I started to talk to people. I went to the main museum in North Dakota. And I learned that North Dakotans are so proud of their history of immigration. Per capita, North Dakota has more refugees resettled than any state in America. The capital city is called Bismarck, North Dakota, because they wanted immigrants from Germany. And the North Dakota picked the name of their city to be a German person's name, Otto von Bismarck, who's a person that every German would remember, so that when they came to America, even if they spoke no English, they could just get off the boat in Ellis Island and say Bismarck, and then they could be instructed how to get there. Their whole identity and culture is based on immigration, settlement, and that even today, they have the most refugees resettled on a per capita basis of any state in the United States. And so they do not feel any problems with immigrants. And this was just a conception that one of my coworkers had, who had never been to North Dakota, didn't know. And so she was putting them in a box. I bet they wouldn't want a person like me. That's absolutely not the case. And when you go into the main museum in the capital city, there's a huge section of the museum that's all about the pride that they have for immigrants and its history with immigration. So I think all of us are when we're ignorant about something, we assume things about other people. And again, I was ignorant too. I didn't know anything about North Dakota. But it's great to go there and have those conversations, and you'll see, I was right about this, or I was wrong about that.
Wow, I would have never, I'm not going to lie, I would have never known that about North. I mean, I knew Bismarck, but I never would have connected the two. Let me rephrase that. Never really thought about that. You know, so after, you know, after all that, right, let's like kind of put it together, like, if you were to tell the American people, hey, this is this one thing you guys don't even see about yourselves, like in a positive way, right? What is it like, you know, that one thing that would just resonate beyond politics?
Yeah, I would say that the foundational ethics that we have as a people is quite strong. And I know it doesn't seem like that because we vote in different ways and we're polarized in certain political aspects. But if you get beyond that, I like my picture analogy. Paint me a picture of what you'd like this country to look like. Those answers that were being said in California with my coworkers or in the Midwest, I was so surprised how similar they were. And now that I've had this experience, you know, my job is not remote anymore, so I'm back in California. The party is over of digital nomading. But It kind of kills me now. I have to admit, I get a little bit frustrated that Americans don't see how similar we are.
Yes.
You know, you hear all this time about we're on the brink of civil war and there's nothing in common. And I hear people in California, you went to Mississippi? Wow, I would never go to Mississippi. I mean, that is just completely absurd. And people in Mississippi are incredible. I was in Mississippi for 10 weeks as a digital nomad. Do I know everything about Mississippi? Of course not. But gotcha. I loved it. And I would be happy to live there. And the people there were incredible. And if any one of those people moved to California and were your neighbors in California, you would be happy to have them as your neighbor. And so I hope that Americans, through travel, through talking to people, can learn that we are remarkably united from an ethics perspective. And we shouldn't take that for granted because many countries do not have that bedrock of similarity. And sometimes I think our polarization, it's a self-inflicted wound. We think everything's terrible. And so we talk about it a lot, but that's actually not true. So I wish people could wake up to that. And I've heard people say to me, oh, well, you have the advantage of being a digital nomad. I work and I can't go to Biloxi, Mississippi. Yeah, I understand that. But you can do that in your own city. I mean, there's parts of your city that you've never been to, I would imagine. And there's places you could go that you've never been to. I have a friend who he goes to church every week, and every week he goes to a different church in his hometown. And he has met an unbelievable amount of different people who think different things, and they're all there to pray to the same God, but they meet people that are different and similar. And it's been an amazing journey for him. So yes, I understand we can't all hop on a plane and go somewhere all the time, it'd be nice. But in your own community, there are so many people that are in slightly different bubbles that you can learn from and see the similarities and see the differences so that you can grow as a person.
No, I mean, that's key. Well, Wesley, I really appreciate you coming on here today. I mean, we had some great conversations, you know, and I really hope everybody, you take this lesson, because we all have a lot more in common than we think we do. And nobody wants to see anybody suffer, for the most part. At least I don't. You know, even somebody that I do not like or do not care for, I don't want to see them hurt. And I feel like, you know, I was telling Leslie before the show, I think that we have to have that standard for ourselves as a country, as a, you know, as a people. Like, there's just lines in general that we don't cross. And we used to have those to a degree, and it feels like they just kind of went out the window because things weren't going the way we expected them to. And hopefully this message can at least get some people to talk to their neighbors, because you'd be surprised, your neighbor probably eats steak too, you know, or they drink coffee just like you, you know, they're very similar habits. Well, Wesley, again, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the work that you do and bringing centrism to the mainstream. I think when you really get past just who did you vote for and you get down to what people think and what people want, I really think we are a centrist country with fundamental values. So I appreciate the work you do.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Wesley.
Thank you.
Baseball has always been a game of inches. Now it's also a game of seconds. T-Mobile and MLB have teamed up to bring ABS Challenge to all 29 ballparks across the U.S. This isn't a minor upgrade. This is the most significant new technology in the history of the sport, and it's powered by T-Mobile. With every pitch thrown, ABS Challenge uses real-time precision to verify the call, giving them the support they need. No delays, no guesswork, just accuracy at the speed the game demands. Thanks to ABS Challenge, T-Mobile is helping power the moments that define the game. When performance and reliability are non-negotiable, MLB turns to T-Mobile. That's not a coincidence. That's what happens when the most innovative network in the country powers the most data-driven sport in the world. T-Mobile powers MLB's most ambitious technology, and America's best network powers your connection to baseball, home or away, every pitch, every game, every day. T-Mobile, it's better over here.
Major League Baseball trademarks and copyrights are used with permission of Major League Baseball. Visit MLB.com. T-Mobile, best mobile network in the U.S. according to Ookla speed test, based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, first half 2026. Ookla trademarks used under license and reprinted with permission.